Welcome. As an influencer, courtesy of Sign You Prep for Kids Syrup, you've been granted exclusive access with Dr. Sears to get your pediatric questions answered. We are very happy to have you participate in today's call. Today, along with other like-minded peers, you will have the opportunity to ask questions and listen to one of America's leading pediatricians about children's health and wellness. I would now like to turn the call over to Dr. Sears. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, welcome, everybody. I'm Dr. Bob Sears. I'm a pediatrician in Orange County, California, and I am a father of three boys, ages 15, 12, and 6. I'm an author in the Sears Parenting Library and have been having a lot of fun writing books with the family for about the last 7 years or so. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. I have a lot of fun talking to parents. Answering questions is one of my favorite things to do, so I think we'll just jump in and go ahead and get started. I have a question from Jennifer from Stamford, Connecticut. This is a great question. Jennifer is wondering if red dye number 40 is linked to night terrors and ADHD. I can't say specifically the night terrors, but I will say for ADHD, hyperactivity, temper tantrums, any sort of extreme, unusual behaviors that you see in your kids, I really do think that kind of stuff can be partly triggered by not just red dye number 40, but any of the food colorings, any artificial ingredients, artificial additives, preservatives. MSG is one thing that comes to mind. I don't like these chemicals. I don't think they're very good to be feeding our children. One of the things that really bugs me is, say, at a soccer game or baseball game with your kids, and after the game's over, one of the parents brings snacks and they hand out the snacks and it's artificial fruit roll-ups and artificial fruit drinks and, candies and food coloring. And, my kids have learned to just simply not eat those things. They stay away from them. They know not to eat anything artificial like that. And I think those kind of chemicals really aren't good for our children's brains. So I really encourage parents to stay away from those chemicals, and you might see improvements if you really purify your diet as best you can. So thanks for that question, Jennifer. Got another question here. It's interesting about earwax. Is there any way to prevent earwax? I am not really sure there's actually any way to prevent earwax from being produced in the ear, but I can say there are ways to prevent it from building up and plugging up the ear, and that would be about once a week or every couple weeks, if you get some hydrogen peroxide and mix it with water, half and half, put about 5 drops in your ear, let it bubble and fizz for about 5 minutes, and then go in the shower and direct the shower stream into your ear. Don't worry, you're not going to hurt your ear by that, gentle of a stream, even if the shower stream is fairly strong. And that'll flush out any loose wax, and that'll keep it from building up. You can also buy earwax drops at a drugstore, of course. Those work as well. And if you ever feel like yourself getting all plugged up, a visit to the pediatrician or sometimes an ear, nose, and throat doctor, they can give you a nice good clean out and start over from square one. So thanks for those couple of questions. Justin, I think we'll go to the phones and take some questions off of the phones now.
It looks like our first question is from Keisha Brindell from Round Rock, and she has one child. Go ahead, Keisha.
Hi, Dr. Spears. I was wondering, my daughter is actually on a wheat-free, dairy-free diet due to behavioral issues. And the artificial coloring and MSG and all of those types of chemicals affect her tremendously. And her tantrums have now subsided, and we're kind of back to normal. But I was wondering what you recommend as your must-have as far as daily nutritional supplements to a child's diet. And, that's it.
All right. Thanks for that question. That's a good question. I get that a lot in the office. It's great to hear that your child's behaviors have improved on that diet. I've seen similar situations in my office. I think the minimum basic things you have to pay attention to, number one would be calcium. You make sure your child gets a lot of calcium. And if you're on a diet that's limited in dairy products, such as the casein-free diet I think you mentioned, you really got to make sure you're getting calcium somewhere. You can get it from dark green vegetables, calcium-fortified orange juice. You can do alternative milks like almond milk or rice milk that are fortified with calcium. Let's see, what else? So you definitely want to make sure you're getting enough calcium. You want to make sure you're getting enough fats, the healthy omega-3 fats. Good source of those are eggs, avocados, fish, olive oil, fish oils, flaxseed oil. So you know, a kid on a picky diet or a limited diet, you definitely want to make sure to get enough of the healthy fats. Protein is important, but it's pretty automatic. It's kind of hard to not get enough protein because protein is everywhere. So feed your kid protein foods, but you don't really have to count protein grams or anything. Those are kind of the basics. I mean, you know, it's fruits and vegetables. And if your child is really, really limited on the fruits and vegetables, you might want to throw in a multivitamin and mineral supplement or buy some sort of fruit and vegetable mix, kind of like a drink or a powder or some sort of fruit and vegetable supplement as well. But those are kind of the basics. Thanks for that interesting question.
Our next question comes from Pauline from Roseville, and Pauline has one child. Go ahead, Pauline.
Hi, Dr. Sears. How are you?
Hi, good. Thanks.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Sure.
I have a question that's also related to a wheat-free diet, but it's on the my daughter has my husband has celiac disease, and I have a 16-month-old daughter who we have kept on a wheat-free, gluten-free diet since she was born. We've heard conflicting opinions from various pediatricians regarding when to test her and how to go about it. And I was wondering if you could help me out with how to proceed, because I would really rather not introduce gluten since she has had what we suspect are reactions to accidents, so to speak, in the past, if it is necessary. So what are your thoughts?
Good question. You know, gluten, just for the audience, is a protein that's in wheat and oats and rye and barley. It's a protein that's in a variety of grains. And when you're really sensitive to gluten and you're very, very allergic to it, we call that celiac disease. You're right that, you know, in order to do the standard test for celiac disease, you would need to be eating a lot of gluten. And I don't suggest you do that yet. What I would start out with is there's a genetic test. Off the top of my head, I forget what it's called, but your doctor would know. It's a genetic test to look to see if your child is carrying a certain gene. It's a kind of gene that if you have that gene, then it means you're fairly likely to have celiac disease. And if the test is normal, you are unlikely to have celiac disease. And I would talk to your doctor about getting that blood test first as a starting place. And then based on that result, you can decide if, you know, over the years you do want to start giving her some gluten and test her. But I would caution you on that. I think it's better to stay, you know, at least for 3-4 years, stay off of gluten before you introduce it to her for testing purposes.
Thank you. Now, Dr. Sears, can we go to an email question?
Yeah, we sure can. Let me see what else we have here. Krista from Bethesda, Maryland. Hey, that's where I was born. Hey, Krista. She asked a question. How do I best support my shy, anxious child in a world that values independence and extroverts? That's a really good question. I happen to be a little bit more of an introverted person. I wouldn't have called myself really shy when I was younger, but that's a good question. It would be useful to know how old your child is, but younger toddlers that are, say, 3, 4, they usually will come out of their shell, and you don't need to push it. You know, just as soon as they're starting into some sort of full-time school, they do tend to come out of their shell. But if your child is already in that environment, say she's 5, 6, 7, 8, and already seems very, you know, still seems shy and anxious, you know, I encourage parents to, of course, you don't have to make them be social or push them into being social, but find what their interests are, such as a hobby or something to do with athletics or special talents like musical things or a non-athletic interest. Find out what your kid really likes to enjoy and likes to do, and really focus on one or two of those things as hobbies. And then as your child builds confidence in her specific hobby or ability or interest, she will then develop more confidence, maybe less anxiety, and want to get out there more and interact with other kids that are also doing the same thing she is. And I think you'll find she will probably come out of her shell over the years by doing that. So thank you for that question, Krista.
Well, thank you very much, Doctor, and thank you to all our participants for calling into today's call.